Welcome to the Alamo City Investing Show, episode 7, with your hosts Aaron Beal and Jason Lee. Today we have something a little different for you because Jason's out of the country and poor planning on my end. So we actually have our first guest, one of our employees and I would say good friend, JP Desmond, is going to talk about just kind of his story in real estate. Honestly, I think it's super applicable for anyone getting started, you know, what to do, what not to do, some of the mistakes he's made along the way. And honestly, it's just a hell of a story. But before we get into that, I'll just have JP, you know, kind of give an introduction, you know, what he does, how he got there, all that good stuff. So JP, welcome to the show.
Yeah. Thanks, Aaron, for letting me do this with you. It's a fun thing. So yeah, I think.
Hey, I appreciate it. Yeah, dude, just bring us from like, hey, how did you get to, I mean, of course, now you work for us, right? But, you know, what did you do before? How did you get into flipping? Because you were flipping before, you know, before you came to work for us. So, you know, kind of bring us up to speed on that.
Yeah. So I think my story is more of like what not to do for sure. Start at the beginning. I guess like before working for you guys, I flipped a few houses and things went really wrong. So last couple of years, just kind of been getting out of debt and really wanted to get into acquisitions, and you guys presented an opportunity for that. So it's been a lot of fun working for y'all. And I guess I initially wanted to get into real estate investing after being in college and doing mechanical engineering and thought about being an engineer and was like, this stuff sucks. Don't really want to do this. And tried out a few internships and things like that. And was like, okay, I want to make money a whole lot quicker and don't want to be a corporate job for the rest of my life, not doing much. So I thought of a faster way, and some guy introduced me into real estate investing, and he was telling me he was wholesaling a house, and I was like, oh, where'd you learn about this? So he put me down that Bigger Pockets rabbit hole. So pretty much listened to Brandon Turner for...
The one we've all gone down.
Exactly. So pretty much listened to Brandon Turner and David Green for a year or two and read all their books and all that stuff and was like, I can totally do this. So after graduating college, ended up working as a mechanical engineer for about a year and a half. And once I started that job, I was bankable. So I was like, ooh, how do I find my first deal? So I talked to my mom and I was living with her during my last semester of college and was like, okay, this is a big house. She doesn't really want to live here anymore. Well, what could be a win-win out of this? And the house needed probably like $50K worth of work. So I was like, hey, mom, what if I ended up buying the house from you and did all the work on it? And we created a scenario that worked for both of us. So she agreed and we came up with a game plan for that. So pretty much spent that last semester of college while I was working that job, doing all my extra time remodeling that house. And
so before you even were out of college, you like somehow figured out how to get your mom's house.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was like, oh, let me talk to an agency, what's on the MLS. And I was like, this stuff doesn't seem like it's good deals. So I kind of wanted to do organic marketing, but I was like, well, I'm making like, I don't know, a couple grand a month doing this stuff. So it doesn't seem like I have a bunch of money to pour into that. So it seemed like my mom's house was like, oh, this thing needs a whole lot of work. And I feel like it could be my first deal. So yeah.
So on the mom's house, did you do everything yourself? Did you hire it out? Like, what all did you do to it? Like, what did that, you know, renovation, some of those numbers look like, if you know or mind sharing those, like, what did that look like for you?
Yeah, so the way I did that one was pretty much remodeling everything I could do myself. So all the demo, all the flooring, all the paint, all the light fixtures and stuff. I was able to talk to my mom's like insurance company and she was able to get a roof. So that was kind of cool that she was able to get that done. And then I experienced a little bit of troubles with contractors on that one by looking for sketchy handymen on Nextdoor apps and stuff, and had a couple of those guys come by and take a few weeks to do a few drywall patches. And that was not fun to deal with, but that was a little bit of taste into that stuff. So they did a little bit of drywall and a little bit of electrical, and I pretty much took on the rest of that myself. I pretty much put everything out of my own pocket into the house, and then I think I spent about $40K on it. And once I bought it from my mom, I believe it appraised for like $240. So I ended up...
Did you just buy this with like just normal conventional loan?
Yeah. So I pretty much spent my whole time remodeling it during that last semester of college. And as soon as I was fully bankable in the summer, then I was just about done with the rehab. So then I bought it with a conventional loan, and we were able to do like an arm's length transaction with my mom, and she helped out with a little bit of like the closing costs and stuff. And I was able to buy it from her like that.
So you remodeled it before you technically owned it, and then just got a normal conventional or FHA or whatever loan on it.
Right. And then I was able to.
And how were you able to get a loan fresh out of college?
Yeah. So as a mechanical engineer, I was making, I think, $55K to start. And this was in 2020, I believe. So interest rates were only like 3%. So it was perfect time when everybody was buying stuff. So I was approved for that $240K just with my own salary.
And no, like, there was no, like, hey, I want you to have 2 years of work history, whatever.
Right. They were good with using your bachelor's degree. So you can be bankable with that.
Interesting. Yeah. Cause I feel like that's, I mean, I don't know that much about that, but that's one thing that I feel like you hear a lot. And then, so I bought a house right out of, I mean, my first job right out of college, I was interning at Valero, moved to Southeast Texas, bought a house. And honestly, I just didn't know. I didn't know that you weren't supposed to do that. I didn't know that you're supposed to like wait. I was just kind of like, rent's this much, houses are this much. Like, I think I'll just buy this house thing. And like, it's funny now because I realized I knew absolutely nothing about the entire process. And it like, you know, took forever. And, you know, there are all these issues because I didn't have a lot of work history, but ended up closing somehow. But I feel like I always hear that like, oh, you need a year or 2 years or whatever. And I think I just somehow just like was dumb enough to not know what was going on and somehow bought a house. But it sounds like you kind of did the same thing.
Yeah.
Except you were a lot smarter about it than I was.
Pretty much. And then after I ended up closing on that with my mom, I ended up just kind of living there for a few months and turned it into a house hack and rented out the other rooms. So that was my first deal.
Cool. So you did that right out of college. You're working, you know, this mechanical engineering job. Is that right?
Right.
Cool. And then, so how long were you there? How did you get from there to, hey, I want to flip houses? What did that whole thing look like?
Yeah, I think after that one was done, I was like, cool, I've got a remodeled house. I've got roommates helping me pay rent. I've got a decent job. And I had like $30K in the bank. I was like, I'm the man. I can do anything. So then I was like, oh, why not go big? I bet I can flip some more houses. And
yeah, if you know JP, he never lacks confidence.
So then I'd met a buddy through like a community group at church, and he was telling me about a flip he was doing, and he let me go walk it with him and stuff. And he was trying to buy some more. I think he had two or three. So then once I saw that flip, and that was like while I was working on my house, then I was reinitiating that conversation with him, like, hey, would you be down to flip something together? Kind of what would that look like? And we were friends, our morals aligned and stuff. So I was like, yeah, I'd be down to do something with this guy. So then we kind of just went balls to the wall and raised a bunch of money and bought like three deals from New Western over the span of like a month or two. And
okay, let's rewind. Did you still have your job at this point?
I was still working as an engineer. Okay. So I had a like decent amount of free time. My job was like supporting a couple other engineers. So I was the inside sales guy for like this HVAC company. And I was able to kind of look at stuff on my computer in my free time while I was there. And like every evening, I was just kind of diving into more real estate stuff and consuming content all the time, learning about it. So it was definitely while I was working that full-time job. And
okay, so you still have the engineering job. You decide you're going to not flip one house, but flip several houses. Let's jump into that and maybe transition of like how you went from engineering job to flipping full time. Like how did that all happen? What was the kind of timeline with all that stuff?
Right. So I feel like that transition was kind of forced, but it didn't happen for a little bit. I closed on those three flips, let's say August. It was all about the same time I bought my mom's house. It was right around that August, September 2020 timeline. And it was like, cool, I bought this one. We closed on these other ones and raised some private money. And then I don't think I left that engineering job for maybe another year. And then that's whenever the flips were all struggling. And I was like, okay, it's not really making sense for me to stay at this job, which I was probably a little optimistic of like, oh, I can pay myself as being a GC on this stuff. But really, there was no money in the rehabs to do that. So Yeah, but somebody needed to kind of make sure those houses didn't foreclose. So that's what I jumped into once I left my engineering
job. Okay, you're jumping way far ahead. So why did you buy three houses at once?
Right.
Like, what is that process? You're like, hey, I, you know, did this cosmetic remodel on, you know, this house I bought for my mom. I want to flip houses to, I own, you know, three houses. What is that? How'd you get there?
Yeah. So what?
And why not just buy one?
So I initially wanted to just kind of start with some organic marketing. And it was like, I don't really want to buy a deal from a wholesaler. I wanted to spend some money on getting some leads and work them and go through all of those trials to see if I could find something myself off market. And then my business partner was flipping some stuff. So he was like, hey, why don't we, if you can raise some money, why don't we get some flips going so we can get some income rolling? And then maybe we can do some organic marketing once we got a little bit more money. So I was like, yeah, that sounds like a plan. So we looked at a New Western deal that was East Side, San Antonio. It was over there on Nolan Street. And This was the first deal we were buying. So I could talk about that. And it was pretty much like a gut job. The house needed everything. And we were walking it with the contractor and got bids on it. And they were like, oh, we can probably do it for like 70, 80. And then one of the guys was like, I can do it for 65. And we were like, okay, we can buy this thing from New Western for 105. We've got a contractor here telling us that they can remodel it for about 65. And then we were like, well, what if we add square footage and all that to make a little bit more money? And he was like, maybe another.
So the original plan was to keep the footprint the same, just remodel the house.
Right.
Okay.
And then like in that we were comparing what it would look like to do an addition and make the house bigger and could it sell for more and only add a little bit to the rehab. And that was basically the plan. So we decided to jump on that one. And we were like, this contractor was referred to us. He seems trustworthy. He's talking to other investors and doing more projects with them too. He's got a lot going on. So He seems like he knows what he's doing. So we bought it for 105 with an initial rehab budget of, I think, 70. And we were thinking we can maybe sell it for like 250. So we're like, oh.
So you were going to do an addition to this house and it was only going to cost $5,000 more than the budget without an addition?
So he was telling us maybe another 10K, 10 to 15. So we were like, okay, if we go a little bit over on the budget from this hard money lender that we got, because we got 65 or 70K from the lender, we were like, okay, we can spend another 10K out of pocket and do this addition and then maybe sell it closer to like 280 or something. So we were like, I think that route makes more sense. So this guy basically started out as our GC and we bought it initial numbers, like I said, though, like 105, 70 to 80 ish to remodel it. And we were thinking we could sell 250 with the addition, maybe 280. So then he poured all the piers for the house. It was a pier and beam. He did good job on the foundation and demoed everything really quickly. And we were like, dang, this guy's rolling quick. And he had asked for a draw at the start. So we gave him that. And that was like our initial touch of trust because we paid him and then he did the addition on the house, the foundation for the whole thing. And we were like, cool. So we decided to give him another draw. And at that time, we had bought a second house that he was working on too. So I don't know if you want to get into that yet, but.
So how far are you into this first house? Like, how long have you owned it? Where's the rehab at this point? What does all that look like?
Yeah. So for this specific house, we had paid him about 15K. We're working on giving him our second draw. The house is probably like demoed throughout and the addition foundation was poured and the foundation for the house was fixed.
Okay, cool. So everything's going at this point, everything's going as planned. And you're like, man, this is easy. Why would we not do two?
Right. So,
okay.
While we were working on this one, actually, so it's a little backwards. So while we were under contract for this one, the same contractor and same New Western guy, we walked another house and this contractor walked us with us and he's like, oh, this one's just about the same amount of work. So I can probably do this one for 70, 80-ish. And we were like, cool. We can buy this one and it'll sell for more. And we ended up going under contract on those two at the same time. but Nolan closed first. So we started working on that one first.
Okay. So you like initially planned to buy the two at the same time.
Right. So we were like, let's buy one. And then it turned to two. And then as soon as we closed on, I think Nolan and the other one was St. John, then we had started this work with this contractor. And then
these are both Eastsiders, right?
Both Eastsiders, like a mile apart from each other.
Cool.
And cool. As soon as we bought those ones, like we had maybe given him the draw, he started working on these ones. Another opportunity presented itself. And I was like, that sounds like a lot. But the guy at New Western was trying to sell us on it. And they were asking, I think, $345 for a nice house in Alamo Heights. And we were like, it doesn't sound like a deal at that. Let's just focus on what we have or give them like a lowball offer and see if they take it. So I think we pitched him on like $280. And we were like, yeah, they're not going to say yes to it. So we'll just kind of let it go. And then they said yes to it. So then we owned these two and we were under contract for that one in Alamo Heights and ended up buying that one for $280.
So Alamo Heights house, what did the scope of work on that one look like?
That one was pretty similar. It had a jank foundation. It needed like a full gut job. It needed like layout changes and everything. And we thought we were smart and decided to do an addition on that one as well.
Okay. Yeah. And $280 purchase price in, I don't know what the Airbnb on that was, $600 or $700 probably.
So
five something maybe. I don't know.
When we bought it, it was $280, $135 rehab. And we got a subject to appraisal for, I think, $600.
Okay. Yeah. And that's pretty like high price point for San Antonio and pretty big project. You're what, 2 or 3 months in and now you have three like pretty serious projects?
Exactly. So about 2 months in, Nolan, St. John were rolling and we hired a different contractor to work on that Nottingham one to the Alamo Heights one to kind of not put so much on that contractor that we thought was doing good. So we thought we were a little bit more diversified and had all three of those going about 3 months in.
Cool. How long were all these supposed to take? And then, you know, what happens from there?
Right. So I think the initial scope of work on like Nolan was 8 weeks. We were budgeting for 12 weeks and thought we were being extra conservative. And then I think we planned our cash to last for 6 months. And we were like, oh, this is like more than enough time. So this thing will sell. Everything on the market was selling pretty quickly. So we were like, oh, we have more than enough time. And then for St. John and Nottingham, pretty similar. It was like, oh, this one's going to be done a month after Nolan. This one's probably going to be done like a month after that. So that's how we started. And then it was exactly not like that. So we had this contractor.
So these all didn't go like perfectly to plan?
Not even close. So the contractor on Nolan ended up, after we gave him that second draw, once he did a good job on the foundation and started some work on St. John, we gave him like, I think $30,000 to do work on both of these houses. And it was just pretty much downhill from there. And then he sends like one guy to the house to do a little bit of work and make you think he's out there. And it's like, hey man, what's going on? Like, I thought this was rocking and rolling and you're going to get working on it. And excuse after excuse. And then like about a month of following up with him, like something's not right here. And then he essentially just like kind of left us high and dry and ran off with that money and left us with this house that was unfinished. And we were like, well, we fronted the money that we're supposed to get back for the rehab. And he basically just left us like that for Nolan and St. John. And then
let's dig into that a little bit, just because like, I know I've had similar experiences with contractors. I know Jason has had similar experience with contractors. Anyone who's been flipping for any amount of time, I feel like has had something like that happen of, you know, it seems like it should be a pretty straightforward transaction of like, hey, we both agree, like I'm paying you to do this, you do this, I pay you, the work's done, we're both happy. For some reason, contractors, it never really works that way. Sometimes it does. But, you know, that being said, like, you know, what advice would you have, you know, knowing what you know now for, you know, the listeners that's, hey, I'm about to do a flip, like how would I vet my contractor? How would I set up payments for a contractor that maybe I'm not used to using? What would you say to, you know, someone getting started on how to pick a contractor and make sure they're kind of protected in that process, you know,
right?
Knowing what you know now.
Yeah. So the biggest mistake I made was like, I'm going to start this relationship off with trust, and I'm expecting them to do what they say they're going to do. And it was just really hard to find people that were going to do what they say they're going to do. And I would absolutely not start that relationship off the same way. I would trust but verify is that saying that goes around, and it's like, okay, get a few bids on this. Let's see what those come in at. You can add contingency. And then really, if you don't know what you're doing, don't take on something too big. But with the contractor side of things, like, come up with your expectations at the very start of the project and be like, hey man, once you finish XYZ, then I'm going to pay you dollar amount. And have that expectation up front. And they don't have any risk going into the project other than a few man hours. And if you're fronting material and they're just doing labor, then you don't need to be paying them big draws up front. And if it's your first project, don't try to be that hands-off investor that gives a GC a ton of money and lets them run the whole thing. Like, you need to be out at the project a lot more, and you need to be on top of the contractor and making sure that they're going to stick to that agreement that you guys came up with at the beginning.
No, that's good. And I would add to that too, like, trust but verify, and then still, like, you know, that still doesn't mean anything. So, like, I've had contractors in the past that didn't do well for me, and I checked their work. I got references. I did all the things I thought I was supposed to do to make sure, you know, I was in good shape, and they still, you know, ran away with money and didn't do projects, whatever. But with that, like, so most of these contractors, they want, you know, they want like 30%, 30%, 40% or whatever, like, as far as like the project, and they're going to want like a big chunk of money up front, which I've done in the past. And every time it sometimes gone fine, sometimes it hasn't, but it's scary. So we always tell people, like, and I get it from the contractor's also taking on risk, you know, they're kind of dealing with the same thing on their end of like, I don't know this person, I don't know if they're going to pay me. Like, it kind of goes both ways, but we try to at least set things up initially with new contractors or people we're not familiar with of like, hey, I'll buy the materials. Like, how about I just pay you labor on this one? Or, you know, until we get started and, you know, kind of build trust. Even if I had to pay you every week, I would rather pay you labor every, you know, week as you complete things than, hey, here's 20, 30, 40, whatever, you know, up front, 10 grand. And to me, just hope that you do what you say you're going to do. So that's what, one thing that we always try to do, you know, when we're working with new people of like, cool, like, we, if you need us to, we can pay for the materials, but like, we're not paying you until this is completed. Like, we're fine with paying you, you know, more often. Like, we're not going to make you wait months, but, you know, setting up that structure where it kind of is beneficial to everyone and builds trust on both sides. But yeah, so dude, getting back to, okay, so you ran into kind of your first issue, contractor on these two jobs, ran away, disappeared, has money problems, you know, the normal deal. So what happens from there?
Yeah, so pretty much from there, it was like, okay, we've got to run this thing ourselves. So I went and got my GC license to start doing that and figure out the subbing stuff. And then we had that third project in Alamo Heights going with a different contractor. And without getting too deep into the details, pretty much did the same thing. Paid him draws. He knocked out the foundation, paid him second draws. And then he found out it was going to be a whole lot more than he was budgeting and telling us, and pretty much left us high and dry and ran off with some money. And
so for these first two houses, the first contractor you hired kind of like runs off, whatever. You didn't try to hire another contractor after that. You're like, hey, I'm just going to figure this out and like sub it out myself. That was kind of your approach?
Right. So I was like, I'm sick of using a GC. Don't want to use another one. So I'm just going to sub this out and see how it goes. So
okay,
I took on that approach, and it was like all mixed timelines, honestly. We were going back and forth between the houses, figuring out which one to work on, which is not good because it's like, you only have so much money and you're trying to do three houses at the same time when we should have just focused on one, got it finished, and then at least had a little bit of money. So we definitely spent too much on all three at the same time. But once I started subbing it out, then you dive into all of that stuff of like, okay, gonna try to cheap out on the sub now because if we don't have any money on this rehab, so let me find the guy off Craigslist that is going to do it cheaper. And I should have known when the guy drove up in such a crappy white van and it was like dented all over. And I was like, okay, I don't think this guy's going to be the best contractor. And it was pretty much another like nightmare with subs going through that, figuring out, okay, who to use for what, asking them for referrals for friends to do electrical, HVAC, all that stuff. And the whole time it's like trying to be really stingy on the budget because we were so over.
And you were pulling all the permits, doing all the inspections and stuff yourself?
Right. So I just got my GC license and pulled the general building permits, and we hired masters for the electrical, plumbing, and HVAC and let them pull their own permits. Yeah, pretty much from there, ran the subs for the houses, and that was for Nolan and St. John, and tried to sub those out to the end and dealt with all the headaches that you go through with that, and had subs run off with money too, and cycling through guys that just weren't doing good work, weren't having guys out at the houses, trying not to give them draws. So a big mistake I made was paying those guys by the week. I was like, oh, this might make a little bit more sense to say, hey, you've got five guys out here. Each guy you're paying, I don't know, $150 to $200 a day. So I'll just pay you a few grand a week and you guys can do as much as you can on the house. And that was a huge mistake.
I've made that mistake before too.
And really wish it had just been like clear cut line item scope of work and budget and stick to it.
Yeah. So when I did that on a house, it was a thing of like, I mean, cause it was like a contractor I kind of liked and I was like, hey, this should be more sustainable for you, like whatever. And then it was a thing of like, cool, like what's going to get done this week? And it was like, I've paid you 3 weeks in a row and the objective each week is finish the drywall and it's not getting done. So it just became a thing, at least for me, of, hey, like I'm paying you by the hour and you're not really like accomplishing the things we're agreeing on. And like, you know, I get, you know, there's going to be issues that come up, but like, you know, you've been building that deck for like 6 weeks. Like what's going on here? It just seems like a thing of like people get real comfortable when it's not like, you know, work or objective based.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what happened. And it's like, you think it's a good idea because you're like, hey, I've got a bunch of various things. They're not specific line items. So we'll just do labor and you can work on whatever needs done for the week. And I'm trusting that you're going to make it work. And then it just goes way over budget and they can slack and get comfortable and not do that stuff and still get paid. So it doesn't keep them going.
Cool. So at this point, a few questions. What is your monthly holding cost, these projects?
I want to say it was around like $9,000 for everything, maybe.
And where the hell are you getting that?
So at the start, we raised some money and pretty much got, I think, $150,000 to work on these houses and buy them, pay the closing cost. And like I said, we budgeted for about 6 months of cash. So as soon as like we knew that things were going downhill and we were going to need a lot more work, we're still trying to stay optimistic, thinking that we can keep the rehab budgets, make sense, and get these things sold. Then we went back to those private investors that gave us some funds and we had to raise more money. And I think we had to do that maybe two or three times throughout the process, just reaching out to other friends and family members as well, because they were pretty much tapped out. And yeah, so we had to just keep getting cash.
Okay, so yeah. So how many months in are we at this point?
Right. So once I started running the subs, it's probably mid-2021 whenever I was working on all of that stuff, like the whole spring of 2021 up until summer is when I think we got the first house listed, which was Nolan.
When did you buy these? I'm just trying to figure out timeline on some of this stuff.
Yeah, so I know it's all kind of confusing and commingled. So
no, it's all good.
Nolan purchased in, I want to say, July or August of 2020, and then ended up selling it around that same like August, September timeline of the next year. So took about 12 months to get that one like on the market and sold.
Okay, so on Nolan, what was your plan, timeline, budget? What was actual?
Right. So original 105-70-ish, 250 to, if we're going to do the addition, 280. I think we ended up spending, I don't know, maybe $150,000 or something on the rehab. I've got a spreadsheet that I don't like to look at. And
it's understandable.
And it was like original 3 week rehab, I mean, 3 month rehab. Ended up taking, what, like almost a year to do it. So we had to refinance our hard money loan twice and then ended up selling on the market. and we got like the boost that everybody was getting in 2021. So instead of 280, we sold for, I don't know, 306 or something. And it was like, cool, we got another 26K. But when you spend over double on the rehab and go 4X the original timeline, it doesn't help too much. So
in the first one, did you make money on that first one?
No.
Okay.
So
what were the numbers on it?
Yeah. So I'd have to pull up that spreadsheet to dive into that and see exactly what
it doesn't have to be exact. Just give me close.
So probably lost like 70 grand on that one.
So you're a year into that, lost 70 grand. Why are these lenders giving you money?
The private lenders, I think partial of it was they like were so originally invested into it that they wanted to get that original payment back. And they were like, okay, y'all need more money to keep going. So we need to give you more so that you can finish these projects and get us the original amount back. So we'll do it. And then I think part of it was like good relationships with those people, and they trusted us and knew we were going to stand by it, and probably felt really bad for us too. So a mix of all that.
Cool. So you sold this first one. You lost 70K. Was it like, did you have to write a check at closing?
We actually got paid at closing because of, we were just using these private investors' money to basically pay the hard money lender. So they were getting their interest money every month, but yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, and we've had those where it's like, it doesn't feel like you lose because it's like a slow burn, but you're like, okay, well, we also paid on this for a year. Like that sucks, but okay. Well, it's nice to not have to write a check at closing. So cool. That's house one. What happens to house two?
House two.
And are you still employed at this point? Do you have a job? Are you still an engineer? What's going on?
Yeah. So I was still an engineer up until about that same timeline right before that Nolan house sold. So maybe August, it sold, I think, in September. I think in August, I quit my job, and maybe it was earlier than that, a couple months before that. And I was like, okay, these projects are near the end. We've got no more money, and we started doing a whole lot of manual labor out there. So I asked for a raise at my job, and they said no. So I was like, well, pretty much in over my head with three houses that I don't know what I'm doing. So I'll just run these and we'll live off of my wife's income. So we were able to do that. And I was just trying to get those things off my shoulders. So
in the middle of that, you're just like, I don't need a job. I'm just going to quit this.
Yeah. And like I said, probably not the smartest idea, but it was also like, okay, this job sucks. I don't like it. Got three houses that have a whole lot of rehab that need left doing, and we've got no money to pay people, and we've got to figure it out. Otherwise, we're going to get foreclosed on. So I can spend a lot more of my time doing that stuff to get out of this mess, and then I'll find another job when I'm done or do something else. So that's kind of what I did. And to get back to house number two, it was a whole lot of the same thing.
Wait, I'm gonna jump in there and brag on you a little bit. One of my favorite things about JP is he'll literally ask anyone for anything. So the more detail in the story is he like went into the boss and was like, hey, I just want a raise. And they're like, hey, that's not how this works. And he's like, well, I want a $20,000 raise. And they told him no. And he's like, well, cool, I'm out. So, and then just like quit and was like, I'm just going to do this real estate thing. All while none of this is like going well, but he's like, you know, I'll just like take the chance. I'll figure it out. But yeah, I mean, dude will literally like ask anyone for anything without shame, which I've come to really appreciate.
Yeah, so don't know if that's the...
Which sometimes works out well, sometimes doesn't, but, you know.
Yeah.
Here we are.
I guess it helps with buying houses, so not afraid to talk to the sellers. But
anyway, so house two, where are we at?
Right, so pretty much commingled, doing all these rehabs when we should have just focused on one, but it's like once Nolan hit the market, St. John was basically like 70% done or something. So as soon as it finished, we'd like kind of cycle that money to work on the other two and then on the final one. And we got that St. John house. A huge mistake on that one that I want to point out is we built a gigantic deck at the front of the house and the back of the house. And I really wish we hadn't, because it probably would have sold for the exact same amount and did not need those gigantic decks that we thought were cool.
What did you spend on the decks?
It was like probably...
And this was post-COVID when like wood was like a bajillion dollars.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And the
Because when I first started, getting fences and decks really wasn't that expensive. And then it was like ever since like COVID, they've like probably tripled or quadrupled in price. And you're like, because it used to be like cool, like $3,000 or $4,000, like a really nice fence. And then like we've gotten bids for like not even crazy fences. And it's like $12,000 to $15,000 now. And it's like, holy crap, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So what do those decks cost
you? I feel like they were around like the $15,000 to $20,000 for the decks on that house.
Each?
I think that was for both, but it was just like an additional $20,000 of rehab budget that was, could have been.
Like, doesn't matter.
Yeah, could have been some steps to the front door, and that's all it really needed. And we made that big mistake. But yeah, so that second house, we poured the funds into it and got that one finished. And I think the original numbers on that one, I think we bought it for $160,000. I want to say we had another $70,000 of rehab. So we were thinking $230,000, and we convinced the lender that it would sell for like, I don't know, $325,000. So that was the original numbers. That one we bought basically like a week after Nolan and didn't get that one sold for a couple months after Nolan. So held it for like a year and a couple months. So had to refinance with the lender twice, and the rehab on that one, we didn't do an addition on that house, but we made the stupid mistake with the decks. So that one, I want to say we spent somewhere in like that same range of like $130,000, I want to say maybe. And it sold for not $325,000. I think that one sold for like $308,000 with a whole lot of concessions because it was needed stuff. And yeah, we probably lost another $50,000 to $70,000 on that one.
Okay, so you're two in. Maybe not going as easy as you saw on the internet.
Yeah, the whole time.
Let's talk about the third house.
The whole time I was just working on these houses. And it's like, dang, I really just wanted to do some organic marketing and find a couple deals and maybe wholesale a little bit, do one flip and see how it goes. And start small and then gain momentum. But at the start, we just were in over our head, bought these three, and it was like living in a nightmare for 2 years of just trying to get out of these things, wanting to do other stuff, but can't go anywhere until these are done. So just figuring it out to the end. We had those two done. They both sold in, let's say, October 2021. They're both done. And then we had that huge house in Alamo Heights, and we had the cash from these ones. So we started going all in on that one to get that one sold. And we're like, cool, once this one's over, we'll see what the numbers look like and get out of this mess. And it was still like pretty optimistic of like, maybe Nottingham will sell for a lot and we could rehab it for less and we'll get close to break even on it or something like that. And it did not go that way. So that one, we originally budgeted for $130,000. We spent all of our time getting that one sold. I mean, finished from like October to March of 2022. So we had owned that one for
October of, you owned it in October 21 or October of 2020?
So we bought it, let's say, I think it was like that October or August timeline of 2020. So all the way to 2021. And then a couple months is when Nolan and St. John sold. And then going into 2022, we still owned it. So we'd owned it for, I think, a year and 7 or 8 months total. And so we had to refinance that one like three times. And we ran the rehab like all in from October to March, so about 5 months. And we originally budgeted that $135,000, had that contractor run out on us on that one. So basically, let my business partner do a lot of like the subbing out on that one because I was doing the other two and he was making the same mistakes I was, paying guys. We were both in agreement coming up with the stuff together and paying guys on a weekly basis and trying out different subs here and there and just getting screwed over one after the other, paying way too much. So that one, we spent somewhere in the 200s on that rehab for sure. And the original contractor,
like 200 just on the rehab, not holding costs, not any other stuff.
Right. So a big part of that was the original contractor said the foundation was so bad that I think he got a bid from Ramjack, I remember, for like 40 something thousand. And we were like, we're not paying that So he found a workaround that he took off the roof of the house and poured like flowable fill under the house to stabilize it, and then poured concrete on top of the original foundation so that it's level, and then we built a new roof. So now you have a house that doesn't move, and it has, yeah.
Wait. I've never heard this story. Can we get into that? So you did what?
So this house was way too elaborate, and it looks cool, but originally needed a whole lot of foundation work. So we got a few bids, and everybody was coming in like the 30,000 to 40,000 range.
So you never fixed the foundation.
So this guy was like, "Hey, I've done this before. We can do this." This was the original contractor before he left, and he was like, "We're gonna take the roof off of the house. We're gonna pour like flowable fill and have an engineer approve it. And then the original foundation that's jank is gonna not move at all. And then now you have a foundation that's crooked but doesn't move. So then you pour like a new foundation, basically cement all on top of it, and now you have a level foundation and a house would."
Wait, so this is, are you pouring this stuff, whatever this is, under the house?
Yeah.
Why are you taking the roof off other than it's going to be completely like crooked?
That's it. Just because it was going to be completely crooked.
Okay. So you poured something under the house to like stabilize
right.
it. An engineer bought off on this?
He did. He stamped it.
I feel bad for whoever owns this house. But anyway.
It was approved by an engineer. I mean, I think it's good. Hopefully we don't get sued later in life. But
I've never heard of that in my life. So anyway, he said, "Hey, let's not fix the foundation. Let's essentially stabilize it and like pour like self-leveling whatever
on top to make it level. And then we can rebuild a new roof." And he was saying he could do all of this for less than just fixing the foundation. That's why we were like, okay, go for it. So once that guy left, we pretty much had this house. I want to say the foundation was fixed, but we hadn't like poured any concrete on top yet. And then the roof was like completely off and like partially rebuilt. And that's when this guy left. I want to say throughout that process, we had given him draws. He had done some work, maybe 3-4 months in of using this guy. And we probably paid him, I think, like 50,000 or so. And he had only done like 20 or 30,000 worth of work and then just left us high and dry. And we were like, okay. And obviously wanted to sue these guys, but in the middle of this mess, couldn't, because we had no money and we just wanted to get out of it. And once it's done, then lawyers were telling us we basically don't have a case, and ended up not doing it. But yeah, so
cool. So house 3 is gone. What does house 3 look like?
Right. So once we took that over,
it's a beautiful house.
It's a really nice house. I mean, it's HGTV level house. So we did that foundation fix. We poured a 500 square foot master bed and bath on the back of it to make it from a 3-2 to a 4-3. And that was part of the original bid of the 135. And we thought we could sell it for 600. So once it was all said and done, like I said, we probably spent 200 to 250 on it. And I think we sold for 680. So we had a little bit of that market inflation, and that helped out a little bit, but going double on the rehab and it taking like a year and 7 months or so definitely didn't make sense. So I think we lost around 100 on that one or more. So yeah.
At this point, you've like bought and sold 3 houses. You've like jumped all in. What is kind of the result of that? Like you're, I don't know, probably what, 2 years into this at that point?
Right. So basically like a year and 7 or 8 months, April 2022 is when that one sold. We were basically completely done with all 3 of those and just figuring out what the total loss was. And after paying interest to the lenders and getting these things sold, I think we lost like a total of around like $425,000 or so. So that was split between me and my partner. So my portion of that was around like 200 plus.
Okay. So flipped 3 houses, didn't go as planned. What happens all this money? Like, Where does that come from? What does that look like?
Right. So a big portion of that was like, we used all of our extra cash throughout that entire timeline and put that into the house. So I think we had some cash saved up and we were making some money living as cheap as we could. So we probably put maybe 40 something thousand into getting that down. And then what I didn't talk about is whenever I did my house hack, I was able to convince my wife, at that time girlfriend, to buy a house and do a house hack. So once we got married and we're in the middle of this and expected this debt, that summer of 2022, we came to the conclusion to sell her house, and we got lucky on that one. And I think we made like $100,000 on that. So wish I had just done a bunch of those. But that one absorbed a big amount of the debt. But pretty much that 200 was spread across like credit cards that we used to fund everything and put all our own money into it. And then a big chunk of it is owed to private lenders that I was able to get to agree to monthly payments and payments over time, and wanted to let them know I'm still going to get them paid back in full, and wanted to stick to my word on that. So still owing them some too.
So when you walk away from these, you sell these houses, you have credit card debt, I guess the hard money lenders are made whole. They're happy, you know, things are out of their life, but you still have, you know, private individuals that lended you money that you're trying to figure out, hey, how do I pay these people back? Do I pay these people back? What does that look like? Right. So what is that? If you don't mind me asking, what is that number? Like once you've sold all these houses, obviously some of that's like stuff you've incurred along the way. It's not like probably a, you know, literal, like you walk away with negative 200. It's probably less than that. But once you sell these, what is that current situation like? Day one of selling the third flip.
Right. So once that sold, and look at it, after we ran all the numbers and everything, we JP of May 2022 basically had 80K of credit card debt. We used the money from that last sale of the house to pay off like the smaller loans. And I think I owed like the main private lender 70,000. And then another one like 25,000. So.
Okay. So yeah, that's pretty serious.
95 plus 80. So I had about 175K of debt walking away from that. So the other 30 was kind of the cash along the way, you could say.
Wild. Well, I don't want to wrap there, but we're going to, but we're not going to stop. So this has gone longer than kind of I expected, but wanted to really dive into this. JP has a cool story. Next week, we're gonna jump back in and tell what I think is the more exciting half of the story. One, like, you know, what he did after that, what he's doing today, you know, kind of what action he took after, you know, hey, I jumped into this real estate thing. You know, I see it go well for all these people and it didn't really go as planned. But, you know, obviously, if we're having these conversations, he's still doing this stuff in some capacity. So honestly, I think that's a lot. That side of the story is a lot more fun. Probably more fun for JP to talk about too. But, you know, hopefully, you know, from this, you guys, you know, are able to learn something. And just like, there's so much stuff on the internet. Like, even, I mean, I've not even had this conversation with JP, but before I knew him, you know, I just saw this really nice flip that he had on Instagram of, you know, this house in Alamo Heights. And I'm like, dang, that's a, you know, I've never flipped a $700,000 house or $600,000 house. Like, that house looks great. And then I meet him and realize there's a lot more to the story than a really nice HGTV ready looking house. But there's just so much on the internet of like, no, nothing ever goes wrong. Everything goes perfect. For me, it's refreshing to hear, you know, people make mistakes, but how do they overcome those? So we're going to wrap there. If you want to connect with us, follow us. I'm, you know, pretty responsive on Instagram. My Instagram is just at aaron.beal. Jason, who's not here, is at investor Jason Lee. JP, I don't know your Instagram. I don't even, also don't know if you'll ever respond to a message, but where can people find you?
Yeah, definitely go on and off of Instagram. But my handle is jpdesmond97, so you can reach out to me there.
Awesome. Yeah, and come back next week because we're going to tell the more fun side of the story. So if you like this, if this is helpful, like, share, subscribe, all that good stuff. Thank you all for listening, and we will be back next week.